It's the CougarFan.com Rising Shop Podcast, episode 359, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Men's basketball has turned on the defense and seen much better results over the last few weeks. Matt and I discuss whether winning out and beating Gonzaga can transform BYU into an NCAA tournament bubble team. Also on the show, we talk about the best and worst case scenarios for BYU football in 2019. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. You can follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, and you can listen to Matt and I talk right now. We're going to start this week's show, Matt, by again talking about melted ice cream.
Why? I'm so sorry.
It's your fault, but our brother Don keeps it going. So Don Mangum, that's at DP Mangum on Twitter, says, if melted ice cream is not soup, which it's not, okay, is an ice cream sandwich really a sandwich? It's not a sandwich. An ice cream sandwich is not a sandwich.
Wait a minute.
It's just ice cream that they call a sandwich.
What's your definition of a sandwich?
We've already talked about this. I'm not redefining sandwiches. It's two pieces of bread. There is no bread in an ice cream sandwich. It's a freaking cookie. There's no bread. There's no sandwich. No more sandwiches. Nothing's a sandwich, all right?
But when you think of an ice cream sandwich, are you talking about like two chocolate chip cookies with vanilla ice cream in the middle? Or are you talking about the classic like brown like graham cracker wafer
type thing?
Yeah, I'm talking
about the classic like black cookie thing and some vanilla ice cream in the middle.
Oh, man, I could go for one of those right now.
Have you ever had, what are they called? It's a brand, and I don't know if it's national, but they do cookies and the sandwiches, you know, but you can buy them at, like, they had them at the cafeteria at my old job, and they were, like, they had a sugar cookie with strawberry ice cream in the middle. It was basically heaven.
That sounds awesome.
And by the way, we have to get this out. In-N-Out fries are terrible. I've seen this all over Twitter. In-N-Out fries.
Why are you doing this? You're alienating half the people who listen to this podcast.
No, I love In-N-Out burgers.
Go
They're great.
After In-N-Out like this.
I'm not going after In-N-Out. Their fries are not good. They're
this
not
is
good.
A flagrant one.
They're not good. You think their fries are good?
When they're animal style, you can put anything underneath that.
Oh my gosh! But they no. A fry should require nothing but maybe fry sauce or ketchup. If it requires more than that, it's not a good fry. So you just told me they're not good fries. You just said it. But it's been all over BYU Twitter lately for some reason. Do you have favorite fries? Mine are Chick-fil-A. I think Chick-fil-A are my favorite.
Chick-fil-A? They're good. Okay.
Dip in Chick-fil-A sauce? Oh, man.
I don't understand why we're not talking about Five Guys right now.
Oh,
I don't even
Five
understand.
Guys fries are amazing. Oh, you're right.
Yeah, are you serious? Five Guys fries? Like, that amazing. Is the definition of the French. That is the gold standard.
Yeah, that is the gold standard. All right, so let's get out of food, and we got another tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
This is from what? Christian Draper, that's at TheGorilla1 on Twitter. Last week, we commented on that he has the Gorilla One. Both of us missed something very important, Matt.
Yeah, we missed a very key fact.
Yeah, here he goes.
And both of us college graduates did not notice what you're about to reveal.
Yes, not just college graduates. We both have advanced degrees, Matt.
We are overly educated.
So this is what Christian had to say, because we were amazed that he got the Twitter handle, the Gorilla One, on Twitter.
Amazing. How did he get that?
How did he get that? Well, Christian,
he must have been a really early adopter of Twitter.
Very early adopter. To answer your question, I've been using this as a screen name for years. It stems from something from undergrad with my roommates. He does not elaborate. I got
Which
it because...
should have. What? Hello, yeah, Christian Draper.
We got to know the story there. I got it because I've spelled it wrong, unknowingly. There should only be one R in gorilla. Neither of us noticed.
So he's a gorilla.
Gorilla. All right. So anyway.
And we didn't even notice. That's priceless.
All right, Matt, let's move on to the Cougar
Band. How can we move on when he didn't tell us what this thing is with his roommates?
I don't know. We can still move on. I mean, my life is not going to be, like, ruined by not knowing that. Let's just make up one. Let's make up one. It's because nothing that I want to say right now is probably appropriate for this podcast.
You were going to make a joke about him having silver back hair?
Yes, I would totally was.
Oh, that's only funny because you make that joke about me. But it's anyway, I have no idea why Christian Draper got this gorilla thing.
Let's
with
move
his
on.
Roommates. I don't know how old he is. I don't know what was going on in pop culture when he was in college. I don't know, and I need to know.
Fine, he can if he wants to share. Christian, you don't have to share just because Matt lacks the.
You should feel some pressure to share.
Oh my gosh! All right, well, let's move on now to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, men's volleyball bounced back last week.
I see what you did there. It's volleyball.
Yeah, that's right. They beat Concordia, and then a really fun match against number 14 USC, and a Sports Center top 10 play in one of those rallies that just went on and on. Matt, it just went on and on. It was amazing.
Anytime you get the da-na-na-da-na-na-da shout out. I mean, that's pretty good.
That's pretty cool. Pretty good. They've got Grand Canyon coming up this week, but back on track. I think they're ranked 7th or 8th. Bad stretch for them, but now bouncing back. Women's basketball that had also had a great stretch, then a not so great stretch. Big week for women's basketball. They beat Portland in thrilling fashion and then upset number 13 Gonzaga. That was the highest, Matt, that the University of Gonzaga women's basketball team has ever been ranked, and we just humbled them.
And I think it was me that said on a podcast a week or two ago when we were talking about the most interesting thing going on in BYU sports right now, that was I feel like it's probably the women's basketball team. It's a really good story there. We've talked a lot about, you know, the men's basketball turnaround is a little bit more dramatic because I feel like they had a little bit of a rockier stretch that lasted longer. You know, the women's had came out hot, had a little bit of a little bump in the road, but have turned that back around. I mean, this is a good team.
Well, and the women's basketball team has a clear path to its potential NCAA tournament berth, right?
Yes.
The men's basketball team. Not a given by any stretch, but they've got a better shot. And Gonzaga, this is the first time since BYU joined the WCC that the women's team has swept Gonzaga. So congratulations to them. Great week and a couple of that Portland game. They had to pull it out very, very tight at the end. In those games, one of the key players was junior Brenna Chase. She won the WCC Player of the Week for the Cougars, and nice job. She had 24 against Portland and 14 against Gonzaga. Really good week for her and for the Cougars. Matt, your new love is the Alliance of American Football. You love it.
It's fun. I've watched it both weekends.
And you saw that guy with the over-the-head pass.
It
was pretty cool. Apparently, though, they're out of money.
That's not good.
An influx of investment of $250 million to keep going. Not a good sign, though, to be fair, completely unheard of. Did you see Steve Spurrier saying that who is he coaching? Birmingham? Who's he coaching?
I thought it was – yeah, maybe it was
Wherever
Birmingham.
It is, he said their home crowd was better than Rocky Top.
Yep.
Still throwing shade on Tennessee. Doesn't change, I guess.
But what something to note here is that the league is saying that the players were never in danger of not. But he's coaching the Orlando Apollos. Players were never in danger of not receiving their game checks, right? So it's difficult to tell how desperate they were for this $250 million investment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, some people are making big deals out of it. New businesses struggle all the time, right? So, and again, sometimes I've wondered why the NFL hasn't just started their own minor league system, right? Started, I mean, they had the NFL Europe, right, for a while.
Yeah, but they, see, the problem with NFL Europe is they were trying to do too many things at once,
well,
right?
It was in
they were trying to do this farm thing and expand into Europe. You got to pick one or the other.
Yeah, yeah. It was problematic. But anyway, good luck to the Salt Lake Stallions this week, looking for their first franchise victory. Matt, before we jump in and talk about men's basketball, remind everybody that you can support the podcast now at patreon.com/riseandshout. There you can, we've got seven patrons. Seven. That's a lot.
Lucky number.
It's seven more than we had before we started this. The default level right now is $2 a month. To support the podcast, you can go lower than that if you want. It'll let you. And you can, of course, go higher than that. It will also let you do that. Again, the podcast will always be free, but this is an opportunity for those of you that really enjoy and have enjoyed listening for either a long time or maybe you're a newcomer and you want to support the podcast. Go ahead and do that. Matt, men's basketball did something that, quite frankly, they've struggled to do the last few years, which is beat two teams they should beat on the road. I mean, was it on the road or at home this week?
They're both on the road.
Both on the road, yeah, yeah. On the road against teams that are not terrible, middle-of-the-road WCC teams. They won both of them, one of them in kind of dramatic comeback fashion. Matt, what do you make of that? I mean, we've been kind of hard on this team and Coach Rose and other things all season, and yet so far no bad conference losses.
Yeah, which is something that we've come to, it's become part of the regular shtick of people forecasting BYU basketball seasons for the past several years, is that, you know, you look at their out-of-conference schedule, here's a couple games that they may lose, and then they're going to struggle with Gonzaga and St. Mary's. At best, they'll probably split those, and then they'll drop one or two games against somebody else in the conference that they should have beat, probably on the road. I believe there was an article in maybe USA Today or somewhere, right, a year or two ago, where they kind of posted that almost as a joke, right? It's the same story with BYU basketball every year. And so the way this season started off, I'm sure everybody's expectation was that at some point they were going to drop one of that type of a game on the road to a WCC opponent that they probably should have beat.
Yeah.
And going into this week, that was the time it was going to happen, that these were the two games that were left.
Well, according to Pomeroy's ratings, they were going to lose all four of these games. San Diego, Loyola Marymount on the road, and then San Francisco, and of course Gonzaga. So, I mean, these were games that, quite frankly, based on how they've played up to this point in the year, though I'd wager to say the last few weeks have been quite different, but these were games that, I mean, you and I, we'd be talking about how it was disappointing, but we certainly wouldn't have been shocked if they had dropped one of those, or heck, even maybe both of them. Right?
Right. Right.
So good victories there. And similar to Brenna Chase for the women's basketball team, TJ Hawes won for the WCC, was the men's basketball WCC player of the week. He had career high points against San Diego and then career high assists right against Loyola Marymount, if I didn't just mix those two games up. I will tell you, Loyola Marymount's defense, they were did a good job defensively, but BYU was able to overcome, so that's great. Matt, Tim Jacobson wants us to talk about Nick Emery.
So then let us talk about Nick Emery.
Let's do it. Let's do it, Tim. He emailed us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. He said, got to give a big shout-out to Nick Emery. There's a noticeable and personal change in his maturity, patience, and character, translating into not just better play, but contagious play. He is the reason we are winning right now. His defense is incredible. Unselfish play. He's 12 steals, 44 points over the last five games, versus one steal and 12 points the previous five games before that. I'm a big fan. He is winning me over. Big change. Keep up the fight, Nick. Hope he feels Cougar Nation behind him. Give us your take, Tim asks us, on Mr. Emery. Matt, do you share Tim's rosy view of Nick Emery over the last five games?
I think Nick Emery has certainly looked good over the last five games, and I think some important statistics are cited there, specifically when we start talking about steals, because this is a team that's needed to force turnovers. I think one other stat that you might look at when considering Nick Emery, and this isn't necessarily just over the last five games, is defensive rebounds. And he's contributed, 26 defensive rebounds, 29 rebounds total. And so it's taking those types of possessions away from another team that become extremely valuable. And so his contribution there is absolutely noted. I don't know. I mean, we've kind of talked about this before, like measurement of a player's character. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, he's contributing on the court and he's not getting into trouble, right? There's not a report out about some NCAA violation.
He hasn't punched anybody.
He hasn't punched anybody, that's which good. In some way is both good and disappointing. But that was a joke. But clearly, he's become an important factor, an important contributor for the team, especially over the last five games.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I am going to disagree with something that Tim wrote, which is he is the reason we are winning right now. The reason we're winning right now is that Nick Emery is part of that reason, but you've got Baxter, who's also playing at a high level defensively, and we have turned into a team, and the reason we're winning is our offense was always fine, right? Not elite, but good, and you had two very efficient scorers in Yoeli Childs and TJ Haws, okay? And yeah, it was never going to be. I would have felt better about the offense if there was a third really efficient scorer. And even with his recent emergence, Emery has not become that. But what's really happened over these last five games, and maybe even a little longer than that, is the defense has improved, and Nick Emery is a big part of that. He is at the moment by far the best perimeter defender we have, and then Baxter. Playing more minutes, he is also adding a lot of defensive energy. We've gone from one of the worst defensive teams over the first, 20 games of the season, to now a mediocre middle of the road defensive team. Which you may go, who cares? Well, that's a big change, over the past. Past six, seven games that we've improved defensively. So I'm going to say that he's right and that Emery's a part of it, but I it's bigger than that. It's Baxter and it's Haws and Childs not checking out, right? Because you could easily just, if you're one of them, go, this season's dumb. I'm out, right? And Childs could start to, start fantasizing about joining, one of his former teammates in Europe or something, right? Or playing for Patino's Greek team.
Jeez.
Oh, it just won the Greek championship. Is it embarrassing that Dick Vitale still thinks that somebody should hire him? Isn't it kind of embarrassing? It's kind of embarrassing, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's probably a lot of stuff about Dick Vitale that's kind of embarrassing. But coming back to your point here, and maybe this is kind of what you're saying, maybe I'm just saying it more explicitly, is what the players that you just mentioned really bring to the table here that I feel like was missing early on in the season is depth. You're at a point now where you can go six, seven guys deep, maybe eight guys deep, where you have people who are meaningful contributors that are not just playing meaningful minutes, but are making something of those minutes, are doing something. Right. And in a lot of cases defensively, and we talked about Nick Emery. I think Gavin Baxter provides an interesting spark in a couple of different places. I look at somebody's stat line over the course of the season, like a McKay Cannon. And this is a guy that's got 21 steals and 31 defensive rebounds. I mean, that's So he's kind of in that same space, making a similar contribution we were talking about before. But that's what the key is here: is you cannot win games down the stretch in a basketball season. You cannot expect to do anything in a conference tournament if you've only got five players. You've got to have some other guys that can come in without there being a drop off in terms of chemistry, in terms of performance, and in terms of level, just level of basketball play.
Well, and I want to give props. You mentioned McKay Cannon. I want to give props to Celius, right? Right now, he is our best three-point shooter. He is playing not great defense. He's not a great defender, but his length and his hustle make him an adequate one, which early in his career I don't think he was. Here's a guy that I think probably thought his role would be bigger, right? And his role has been big, but he might have thought, he had a bigger role, but you don't see any, body language, anything with him that he's anything but happy to be playing the role that he is playing, right? So, to your point, there have been some guys that have stepped up, and Baxter emerging and Emery's emerging moved some of those guys back to a more comfortable role for them. Like mm-hmm. Cannon and Celius, right? It moves them back into a more comfortable role, or even Luke Worthington, right? Who's still playing some meaningful minutes when there's foul trouble or matchups dictate it, doing what he should be doing.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see what happens this next week. I think the USF game, I hold some hope there. Gonzaga on the road. I just have a hard time not being biased.
About to preview those games. What are you doing? About to preview.
I'm sorry. Man, I'm always jumping the gun. I'm always out in front.
So let's talk about San Francisco. San Francisco's the surprise team of the WCC this year, right? They're, depending on what rating you look at, they're a top 50 team by most accounts from an advanced statistic standpoint. That being said, they have pretty much the same record as BYU, right? But they have some big wins along the way. You look at their team, though, and Matt, they we'll get to the first game they play. Some of their best players pose a little bit of a problem for BYU, and I think Frankie Ferrari is top on that. He's their 6 foot, I guess, point guard, though he does a lot in that offense, not just a traditional point guard, but he does a really good job with that. Here's the problem. In the first matchup we had with him, we had nobody who could stop him, right? And he was wreaking havoc, even if his numbers weren't necessarily the biggest of the year. It was still a big deal. And they've got a couple other guys we struggled to match up with in the first time, but you look at I'm pulling it up. You look at Ferrari's numbers: 21 points and 7 assists in that first game. We didn't disrupt him at all,
right?
And if Emery is now that guy, that defender, I feel like Emery's going to have to play even more minutes than he's been playing, because I just don't think we can stop Ferrari without Emery or somebody else disrupting what he does.
Well, and what's tough about a guy like Ferrari, right, is he's so good from the charity stripe.
Yeah.
So the way that you defend him and try and slow him down becomes really important. So it's tough. When you look at the team's schedule, if you look at the team's schedule in isolation, I feel like when I do that, I feel pretty good about our chances, right? You look at the teams that they've lost to, what those scores have looked like, some of the common conference opponents, and you think, okay, maybe we kind of line up against this team. But it's the individual matchups that you've been talking about that are really going to make the difference here. And if we can figure a couple of those things out, that's how we win this. That's how we win this basketball game.
Well, and granted, it was in San Francisco, but San Francisco pounded the Cougars not that long ago.
Right.
That being said, San Francisco has since dropped three games, and they did it in a row since they beat us. So they beat Portland after us, and then lost at San Diego, at St. Mary's, those were both close ones, and then got absolutely destroyed by
just dismantled by Gonzaga,
which everybody's getting destroyed by Gonzaga. Though I watched them against, was it LMU on Thursday of last week? I watched that game, and they LMU's defense was disruptive for them, but they ended up pulling it out. But they have since, in their past three games, San Francisco has beat Santa Clara and Pepperdine at home. That Santa Clara game was closer than it probably should have been. And then they had to go to overtime at Portland. Matt, I like us to win this game. I think BYU, despite the lopsided outcome last time and the fact that there are some matchup issues, especially Ferrari for the Cougars, I think BYU pulls off a close one on Thursday night in Provo. What do you think?
I think that BYU does pull off a close one. And I think a lot of the advantages this game being at home, and if you look at the formula, what appears to be the formula to beating this team is it's somebody other than Ferrari has got to lead the attack.
Yeah. You got to force it out of his hands as much as you can.
Yeah. So typically in games where they've lost, especially like you look at that close game, against San Diego, Ferrari was, not even one of the top two point scorers in that game, right? He definitely didn't lead him in points. And so when he leads in points, they typically do well, with the exception of Gonzaga, right? But getting crushed by Gonzaga is an aberration. We can't really use that as our template. But when they played Gonzaga close, Ferrari put up 21 points.
Yeah.
So I think that matchup becomes very key. If you take him out of that space, you keep their point total down, and you have an opportunity to do something there. But you're going to have to figure something out on defense to keep the ball out of his hands.
Yeah. Another thing on our side for the Cougars against San Francisco is we had 8 assists on 23 made field goals. That's way below our average percentage-wise. As BYU and Childs, whose stat line looks decent, 25 points, 4 boards, and a couple assists. It was not a good offensive game for him. He was 9 for 21 on the floor, and only 4 rebounds. We're going to need Zach Seljaas should probably not be our leading rebounder in an important game. Nothing against, like I said, I like Seljaas. He's a glue guy, but Childs. This will be a game where we need Childs to really step up. And again, like I said, last time Emery played 13 minutes, did basically nothing, missed 4 shots. I think Emery's going to have to play some more this time. And he has been playing more lately, right? He played 36 minutes against San Diego, 20 against Loyola Marymount. He'll play, I'm sure, in that 20 to 25 minute mark, maybe even up towards 30, and he may need to if he doesn't get in foul trouble to keep Ferrari from carving up the Cougars.
Yep.
All right. So after that, it's on the road to Spokane to play Gonzaga, the second best team in all the land.
Oh boy.
I watched Kentucky dismantle Tennessee on Saturday, so you got the number one team knocked off there. Which, by the way, I watched a ton of college basketball over the past couple weeks. This is going to be a wide-open, crazy year in the NCAA tournament.
It's going to be so awesome.
I think there's going to be – I don't know. I mean, obviously Gonzaga, Tennessee, Duke – some of these other teams are quite good, right? And could go on a run, and any of those teams could easily win it. But I'm not going to be shocked if some of them get knocked out in the second round either, right?
Right.
Based on the way they've played, and somehow some of these other teams are going to be mid tournament kind of seeds that where they could do. But anyway, Gonzaga, Matt, I don't know what to say about them except that. This is, I've been saying it all year, this may be the best team they've ever had. And this could be a chance for them to win, you know, win the championship, right? This year, Matt, are you as high on Gonzaga as I am, or are you like maybe some of their detractors? Like, well, they haven't played anybody in 3 months, so let's slow the roll on that one.
I'm with they haven't played anybody in 3 months. We need to slow our roll.
How dare you, sir?
I mean, really? I mean, come on. Like, listen, I want them to be good. I want them to be well seeded. I want them to do well in the tournament. I'm not going to lie to you. But, I mean, really? I mean, like, let's slow our roll here just a little bit.
You are a fiend and a, I don't know, I was trying to come up with some, like, old school way to make fun of you, but can't remember.
I mean, but what are the marquee wins? I mean, obviously Duke.
Yeah, Duke and the number one draft pick in all of the land, soon to be. Possibly the nation's best player.
But the spectrum on the schedule this year for them is crazy.
That's the whole point, right? They're in the WCC. But if you look at the WCC is better this year. Greg Rubel's been tweeting about it for the last couple of days. The WCC is better this year than maybe any other year since BYU joined the conference. Okay, you have a legitimately great team in Gonzaga. You have two pretty good teams, top 50 teams in St. Mary's and San Francisco. And you have BYU, who's a top 75 team by most accounts, but is playing like a top 50 team, right? So you have four teams right now playing at a top 50 type of level. And since we've been in the conference, right, the max you ever had was three good teams, right? And everybody else was mediocre or probably worse. So for me, Gonzaga this year, this was the year where you could see them dropping a road game, right? But they haven't. They beat San Francisco on the road. They haven't played St. Mary's on the road yet, but they beat St. Mary's at home. They're going to beat BYU. They beat BYU on the road, handing Rose his worst loss in the Marriott Center ever. You know, I get they haven't played anybody in 3 months, but you look at they lost to Tennessee by three, and it was they had played 4 days before that, right? Wednesday to Sunday to Saturday, they played Creighton, Washington, and Tennessee, and then lost that one to North Carolina as well. But Duke's the win, right? I mean, they beat Duke on a neutral court, and Duke possibly is the best team in the country with the best player in the country.
Right. But that's what I'm saying, right? Is they got this huge win and a historic win. Don't get me wrong, but
that win against North Alabama. That was huge.
Look, they get two more cracks to make a statement in the early part of that resume against Tennessee and against North Carolina. And they didn't get it done. I know that the Tennessee game's close. I get it. Listen, all I'm saying is I don't know that they're a number one seed.
Oh, they're a number one seed. Stop it.
Come on.
Oh, you're being ridiculous. Who are your number one seeds right now?
I don't know. I mean, but I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that question.
Well,
off the top of my head, I'd probably list them. But
Virginia is obviously up there. Tennessee just had that big loss against Kentucky, but they could play their way into that. Duke, obviously. So there are other worthy teams. If they drop one of these last conference games, or heaven forbid, don't win the WCC tournament, then yes, I agree. They will not. But I think if they win out, they get a number one seed.
I think you can make an argument for a couple of these other teams. I think you can make an argument for Tennessee.
Yes.
You know, I think you look at Duke, Gonzaga, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, maybe in Michigan. I struggle a little bit with Nevada for similar reasons, but I'm just saying that they're in that conversation, but I don't see a number one seed there.
But in the end, right? You want a number one seed or you want a number two seed. In the end, I don't know that it materially changes your chances to win the championship, right?
Yeah, that may be
a little bit. It depending on who your matchups are against, right? It might change it a little bit. in the end, you want to be one of those top eight teams, right? Because you got preferential treatment in the early rounds and all that stuff, right? I think they're worthy of a number one, but I think, you know, if they don't lose. So, Matt, if they beat San Francisco, if BYU beats, and we don't need to talk about Gonzaga all day, they've got some amazing players, right, that we just can't match up against. Because they've got, I think, four players, at least three, that are better than anybody we've got, right? Yep. Clark, for sure. Hachimura, for sure. Petrušev, the reserved role, quite frankly, might be better than, I mean, he's not even playing that much comparatively, and I think he might be better than anybody we've got. And Norvell, and I didn't even mention Perkins yet, right? Because technically, I think Yoeli Childs may be a better player than Perkins, right? But you look at that group and you say, holy crap, how are you going to ever beat those guys? And the answer is BYU won't. That's the answer. They're going to get beat by 25 points on Saturday night. You disagree?
Yep. No, it's going to be bad.
All right. Okay. So, Matt, Gary Payne apparently has been reading my mind.
That's a scary thought.
It is a scary thought.
I apologize to you, Gary Payne.
All right. At FastBreakGP on Twitter, and you can tweet at us, at BYU_RiceShot. He says, BYU basketball somehow wins out, if they do. Legit bubble team or no chance? Did hear reference to powder blue last week? That is UNC. Very ugly and solidly behind Navy and Royal Blue for sure. Hashtag paintbag. Hashtag tweetbag. Matt, we can discuss the colors later, but first and foremost, if BYU were to win out the rest of the regular season, and then, he's not saying this, but I'm going to say it, and then win in the semifinals, because that means they would be second place, right? Because all they have to do is win out, because they're in second place today. So then they get byes to the semi. Then they beat whoever it is they have in the semi, and then lose to Gonzaga in the conference championship. They've now beat Gonzaga. They've got this marquee win. Are they a legit bubble team?
No.
Yes, they totally are. They are totally. I'm not saying they'll get in. They're a bubble team at that point. They are in the conversation. If they beat Gonzaga, knock them off their throne, win out the rest of these games, that means their only conference losses will be to Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and San Francisco. I mean, that's good. No, you're not buying it. You're not buying the resume.
The resume is just too tough. I mean, that's a lot of losses, right? But there's going to be teams in the tournament with those kind of numbers.
I mean, there's going to be. Last year, we had some teams, Power Five teams that had losing records in their conference. And I get they're in better conferences, but I don't think that should be a thing, right? That shouldn't be a thing. If you were terrible in your own conference, you shouldn't get in just because your conference was good. You were terrible in your own conference. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't really disagree with you there, but if I'm not going to give Gonzaga a number one seed, mostly because I'm just being stingy, I don't know that I can say that BYU becomes a bubble team.
Yeah, I don't know that they get in, right? But at this point, I think they've played their way into the NIT, very likely, unless they just absolutely lay an egg here in the last couple of weeks. And I think if they beat San Francisco and San Diego but lose to Gonzaga, I think people will mention them, but I don't think they make bubble team lists, because in the end, your signature win is St. Mary's, right? A team that you also lost to by 22 points. So I'm with you. I don't think they get into the tournament, but I think they've got a legit shot to be at least in the conversation, which if you'd told me that a month or a month and a half ago, I would have told you no way, because they were going to drop some stupid game to Pepperdine. Right?
Yep.
Because they always seem to lose to Pepperdine. Which, by the way, they didn't lose to Pepperdine this year. And the good thing is we only had to play them once.
Phew.
because of the new schedule. So anyway, I think they are a potential bubble team, Gary, but Matt disagrees. So, and by the way, Powder Blue is terrible. Powder Blue is terrible.
Yeah, but I was just saying, listen, I was just saying the shade now isn't the same, and I stand by my statement.
I totally agree with you. I was just giving you crap last week, which I think some people thought I was being serious. I know the shades have changed. I was just giving you crap.
I think during the course of the 80s and 90s, if you look at the jerseys, they were not nearly as careful from a branding and marketing perspective with the colors. So if they, you know, depending on the cut, the design, or the company that was making the jerseys in a given year, that royal blue color tweaked a little bit. I think if you get out the palindrome or whatever the thing is, you're going to see that the shades were a little bit different. And I think just nobody cared.
The palindrome?
What is the thing with the colors?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy, but I'm pretty
palindrome,
sure it's not the
I think
palindrome.
Is a language thing. I don't know what the color wheel thing.
Palindrome. What is a palindrome? Palindrome is a word, number, phrase, or characters which reads the... Yeah, yeah. That's like my daughter Hannah reads backwards and forwards. The same. That's not what you're talking about. But yes, the color wheel. Yes, yes, something like that.
Yeah, there's some other there's a fancy word for it.
Whatever. Yeah, there's a fancy word. I'm not the art guy. Anyway, so similar to that, Travis Brewer has a question on Facebook. You can leave us questions at facebook.com/riseandshout. I would think that the WCC should be a two-bid league. They're better than the Pac-12 and the Mountain West. But now it seems that some overrated team from the East always gets in instead. Unfortunately, the only way I think someone gets in is if somehow Gonzaga loses in the WCC tournament. I actually think you're wrong, Travis. I think based on the ratings of the WCC this year, I think the tournament, the committee is going to be hard-pressed not to put in whoever looks like they have the second-best resume in the WCC. I think they get two teams in. Now, again, that could change if San Francisco and St. Mary's lay some major eggs here in the last couple of weeks. But I think another team gets in. What do you think?
I think I've seen at least one projection that's showing St. Mary's as a force team as a first four out. So I know initially you look at that and you say, well, that doesn't state that they're a two-bid league, but I think in a way it does, right? That's telling you that you've got a second team in this conference that is close enough to being inside the conversation. And depending on what they do down the stretch in the conference tournament, they could play their way in.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. So, all right. Well, we should probably talk some football, Matt.
Football.
Our first question on football comes from off of Facebook from Dave Broderick. He says, how long does it take for a fan base to adjust to realistic expectations for football not being perennial championship contenders, which he said, you know, they weren't really that. Matt, we've talked about this with expectations before. I think with these schedules, people have unrealistic expectations, and we're going to run through the whole schedule again because that's what we love to do, and we were asked to do it by one of the listeners. But I think the expectations are a little out of whack for some fans. But that being said, I mean, everybody can expect whatever they want, right? If you come into the year thinking this is the year BYU goes undefeated again, more power to you, but you're probably going to end it's going to end in disappointment for you.
I mean, adjusting to realistic expectations that we're not a perennial championship contender, I'll tell you how long that takes. At longer than 35 years. Right? Like, we've never been a perennial championship contender. Now, perennial conference championship contender, maybe. And we've had some stretches where we've been highly ranked in the 25 and those things. But as part of the national championship conversation on a perennial basis, that's never been who we are. So if there's a pocket of fans out there that we're waiting for them to adjust that off of that expectation, if they haven't gotten there by now, I don't know what's going to convince them to come off of it.
So here's the thing, Matt. Who has a chance at winning the college football championship next year?
Alabama.
Okay. Who else?
Clemson.
Okay. Who else? Georgia?
Georgia.
You want to throw Georgia in there? What about Oklahoma?
I'll give you Oklahoma because they picked up a really good
quarterback. I think they're
going to
drop off without Kyler Murray, but they were in there this year, right?
Yeah, but they picked up a quarterback who's been in the championship game before, so not going to hurt.
Right. What about Notre Dame?
I have to look at their schedule. They kind of had the perfect
storm. But just from not like specifically they could win it, but just
Notre Dame. I'd even throw LSU. Out Ohio State. Maybe Michigan seems
Ohio
to be
State,
resurging.
Michigan.
Sorry, UCF, you're never going to make it.
Yeah, not UCF.
Nobody in the Pac-12.
We haven't mentioned anybody in the Pac-12, and nobody in the ACC besides Clemson. Here's the thing. Most we also both root for Purdue, okay? How often in the history of Purdue football have they been in the national conversation for best team in the country?
Every time Drew Brees was there.
Even then, not really.
They won a Rose Bowl. Drew Brees was there.
Okay? They won a Rose Bowl while he was there, right? I'm just saying, I think every fan base thinks their team is the most maligned and they break your heart more than anybody else. Unless you're Clemson, Alabama over the last few years, or that stretch of Nebraska in the 90s, right? The Miami and Florida State in their heydays. Pick a few other teams that won consistently over 4, 5, 6, 10 years, right?
If you look at them, and you even talk about Texas fans, all of those schools that you just mentioned talk about this in terms of we need to get back to where we belong. They see those stretches. Like Nebraska looks at that stretch and identifies themselves as that stretch.
We should always be
looking
in contention.
At the history.
Yeah, we should always be in contention for the
right.
for the title. Right. What happens to Alabama when Saban leaves?
Yeah, they're going to be terrible.
Most likely, they're not as good, right? I mean,
terrible
is
probably. I'm overselling it.
Could be. They could be terrible. They've had stretches where they weren't very good. My point isn't to justify anything that's going on at BYU. It's just to say that we've talked about this before. BYU basketball is probably even a better example. When people are like, "Oh, Rose is slipping," and this hasn't been a great stretch for Rose the last 3 years, right? And nobody's saying that it has been. But when you talk about where BYU basketball should be, Rose's stretch as a coach is better than anything else we've seen since the 50s, right? So I don't know where people think you're going to go. In BYU football, Bronco had a couple of really good seasons, but he also had some mediocre ones. Lavelle Edwards had some amazing seasons, right? 84, 96, 91, a bunch of in the 80s, actually. That's when we were the best most consistently. And he also had a bunch of mediocre ones, right? And that's what happens because every team is trying to win. Well, maybe not Vanderbilt. But every other team is trying to win, right?
I sure hope they're not trying.
But anyway, so that
SEC speed.
So SEC speed, that's right. So Matt, talking about spring football, Lawless Republic had three players that they said were under the radar. Obviously everyone's talking about Zach Wilson and Jaren Hall because of the baseball stuff. And obviously, Corbin, we've lost some guys, last year. But this year, who are the guys that are flying under the radar going into spring? And they have three. And I want you to put thumbs up or thumbs down. You think this is somebody that's flying under the radar. All right?
Okay.
Moroni Lalupututau.
I think everybody sees him coming.
Yeah, I think because he was injured last year and he was, when he got hurt, a big part of the offense. I don't think he's flying under the radar for any fan of any, level. Right. That being said, it's going to be weird next year to figure out, the offense. It does Bushman disappear again? Right.
Right.
At the beginning of the year. I hope not. I hope they find a way to use both of those guys in high measure. Jake Oldroyd is number two.
I'll give that a thumbs up.
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely flying under the radar. I don't think he kicks. I think it's Southam. I know okay. that in this article they reference he kicked a game-winning field goal once, la-di-da, right? Southam's got a massive leg. I know everybody wanted to, like, fire him after he missed a couple field goals last year, but luckily...
But I think to the point what they're making here is this is a guy that people aren't expecting to come out and even be the kicker. Right?
For sure. He's definitely...
So this guy's definitely under the radar.
He's definitely under the radar. And then the last one... And I totally think this is the one that I had in my head before I read the article. But they cheated and did two players. Austin Kafensis and Bo Hodge.
Thumbs up under the radar.
Both of them under the radar. I thought Hodge was going to be a part of the offense last year, and he was not. And Kafensis was, but barely, right? Only in very weird special packages. Matt Hadley came out of nowhere to be one of the top running backs last year, and that in this article that's written by Adam Gibby, by the way, to give credit where credit is due, he points out that, you know, nobody thought Hadley was going to finish his career as one of our better running backs, right? And then, you know, you look at that, and Matt, do you think, I mean, what's the percent chance that Kafensis or Bo Hodge becomes one of the top running backs for BYU next year? I think it's pretty good.
I don't know that it's higher than 20, but that means they're one of five guys.
Yeah, that's what I would say. 15 or 20, that's what I was going to say. I think that's pretty high, right? Seeing that neither of them got major carries last year and they were both on the roster.
But you have a great opportunity. It's the perfect storm for a guy like a Bo Hodge right now, right?
Right.
Is last, you know, didn't get a lot of carries this last season, kind of faded into the background, and is, you know, he's switching positions. There's some of that going on, but if you look at where we are at the position he is today, like, it's a land of opportunity, guys.
Yeah.
If somebody can step up and be productive, like, this is a wide open shot at a starting spot.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting what Grimes does to utilize everybody, right? If you don't have a depth at running back like they would want to have, right? And I wondered, too, is there somebody on the defense we're not thinking of, like a Hadley, that ends up getting moved over, right? They have shown absolute and total willingness to move people all over the field to fill in where they have issues, right?
Yep.
And is it a linebacker or, you know, somebody that gets put in? But I think, to your point, I'm totally with you. Kafensis or Bo Hodge, I think in spring and or fall, is going to get a chance to prove that they could be in that three or four running back mix. And like you said, great opportunity for either of those guys. And they're both super athletic, right? And the good thing is if they're playing on the field, the trick play potential is always there, right?
Yep.
Hodge has a good enough arm that the trick play potential, I think, is always just sitting there, and defenses will have to always account for it when he's in the backfield, which I love because I think it creates indecision and matchup problems for the defense. So anyway, all right. Jared Nielsen has a question for us off Facebook. He says, what is the number one thing that has to happen this spring to make you feel like we are progressing? Where is Putu Tau? Hashtag, how bad is it when Riley Burt leaves for Utah State? Hashtag, Wilson can't sling because he's in a sling. Hashtag, tweetbag. I think Jared was trying to win, like, the hashtag award.
He went all out. He put some real effort into that.
That was some major hashtagging. Matt, what's the biggest thing you need to see this spring, and spring football starts on March 4th, in order to feel like the Cougars are progressing?
There's so much coach speak and other stuff that comes out of spring ball. I don't know that there's going to be anything that comes out of here that screams to me this team is progressing, especially when you look at the fact that, you know, your starting quarterback isn't even participating. So what does it even tell you if these guys that are coming at wide receiver are catching passes against, you know, our defense or even like a second string of our defense? I mean, for me, the big thing I want to see out of spring ball is I don't want it just nobody get hurt. And if we can get through spring ball without any major injuries, and I guess second to that, that is kind of an answer to the question is, can we get a feel for what we're doing at running back at this point? Do we have somebody on the roster that's going to fill in that void? Are we looking at a running back by committee type of situation? Or do we have somebody here who may actually turn out to be a feature back? But I don't expect that question to get answered during spring ball.
Yeah. It's hard to, I think we might get a little bit of a clue on the running back, right? But I don't know if it'll get answered to everyone's satisfaction either. I think like you, I just want people to be healthy. It's really hard because you're going to hear all the stories we hear every year. So-and-so's in the best shape of their life. So-and-so's this, so-and-so's that. And I don't know if we'll know. And you're not going to have your starting quarterback throwing to the wide receivers or the tight ends. And you may not even have your backup quarterback, depending on Hall's availability either. You know what I mean? So, the offense is going to be weird. I think on defense, you're just going to want to see that there are some guys stepping up into roles that have been vacated, right? Who's going to be the next Taki Taki, the next Corbin Kafusi, right? I think that's probably on the defensive side. That'll show me. I don't know if it's progression. It's more of that defense isn't going to fall off a cliff, right, when you lost two of your best players. But again, we'll see, and we'll be talking a lot more spring football over the next few weeks. Well, John Brame, that's at Johnny Dangerman on Twitter, he wants us to do something, Matt, that we love to do.
All right. Oh, here we go. Here it comes.
And this is how we're going to finish the show. Sorry, Sweeney, we've got a question of yours that's really good, but we're going to push it off another week. He says, play out next football season as both the realistic best-case scenario and the realistic worst-case scenario, then guess which is more likely. I worry that this season has a lot of upside if we put things together, but possibly even more downside if a few things go south. All right, Matt, best case, realistic best case scenario for next season, okay? All right. How many wins do we think we get in a realistic best case scenario? You beat Utah in that scenario, right?
Oh, then I have to change my count. Realistic best case scenario. Yeah, okay, you beat Utah.
Hey, it's in Provo, and we could have beat them last year, right? Close.
Okay.
Should have beat them last year. At Tennessee, we win, because Tennessee, in the best case scenario, Tennessee is not very good.
Okay. Right?
USC in Provo, do we win that game in the best case scenario?
Best case scenario, we beat that team.
Best case scenario, Washington, we lose. Right?
Yep.
So that's 3-1. At Toledo, best case scenario, we win.
Uh-huh.
4-1. At USF, best case scenario, 5-1.
We win.
Right. Best case scenario, Boise State, realistic best case scenario. I don't think we win that game.
I think in a best case scenario at home, we beat that team.
Okay. So you're saying at that point, 5-1, right? 6-1?
I'm saying 6. You're saying 5.
6-1. All right. Well, we'll go with yours. We'll ride with the best case scenario. At Utah State, we win.
Yep.
7-1. Liberty 8-1. Idaho State 9-1. UMass 10-1. At San Diego State 11-1. That's the best case. Realistic best case scenario is a special season.
Yes.
Okay. Is a special season. Worst case scenario, Matt. Worst case scenario. We lose against Utah to open. Tennessee's better than they were last year, and or we just cough it up in a road game in a tough, despite what the old ball coach said. USC comes in and beats us 0-3, and we're 0-4 when we go to Toledo. I'm going to say realistic worst case scenario, we lose at Toledo and we're 0-5. Okay?
Man, I had Toledo as a win in the worst case scenario,
so,
but we'll
stick
with
you. We'll do that. No, we'll do it. 1-4. Let's try to be a little bit more realistic. At USF, worst case scenario.
I think we still win that game.
Okay, 2-4. We lose to Boise State, 2-5. Lose to Utah State, right?
Yep.
2-6. Beat Liberty, 3-6. Beat Idaho State, 4-6. What about UMass? I'm going to say we win.
Worst case scenario, we've lost to this team before.
Oh, stop it.
All right. So 5.
So five. Let's call it 5 wins is your realistic worst case, and 10 or 11 is your realistic best case, right? Now, yeah. There's a lot of variance there because, quite frankly, the team has been pretty mediocre the last few years, right? But there's reasons to be optimistic about the offense with Zach Wilson and some of the other talent you have there. And the other problem with any exercise like this is it also depends on the quality of the teams we end up playing, right? And every year we say this, a couple of these teams are going to be substantially worse than we think they're going to be, even the good ones. Like, look at Wisconsin last year. We beat Wisconsin on the road. We think it's like a marquee win in program history. Well, they turned out to be a very good team, but not the top 10 team we thought they were, right?
Right, right.
When we played them. And a couple of these teams may end up being better. You know, like Utah State last year. I know I hate losing to Utah State, but they were a pretty good team last year, right? And at the beginning of the year, I even said they're going to be terrible, right? And I was wrong. So, you know, there's a lot of things at play here. Which is more likely, 5 wins or 10? We'll set it at 10 or 10 wins.
Which is more likely?
Yeah, that's what between John's those two? Asking us. Between those two scenarios, which is more likely?
10. I think the 5-win scenario is really unlikely. I don't think 10 wins is... I don't think 10 or 11 wins is very likely either, though.
This schedule is top-heavy, right? We also play a bunch of teams that aren't very good. So I feel like the 10... I don't think either of those is where this season really lands. I think the real possibilities are somewhere between 7 and 9, right?
I think it's 8. If I had to pick a number, 8's the number I land
right. So you look at that and you say, I think 10 is more. Now... could the wheels come off and we win 5 games because of injury and or maybe some other things? Perhaps. But what injury would make you think the wheels – I mean, if Zach Wilson gets hurt, is the drop-off to Jaren Hall going to be massive? I don't know because we've never seen him play, but I'm going to venture a guess that it's not massive. I'm going to venture it's a step down but not a huge one, right? What else could happen that made you think – the wheels would totally come off, right? I mean, I don't see anything particular going on there. Now, when BYU was 4-9 that year, a couple of years ago, neither of us had that as the realistic worst case scenario. So, to be fair.
Right.
But anyway, all right. And we can't lose to San Diego State.
Oh, man, that would be the worst for you. You wouldn't even know what to do with yourself.
Oh, it would be sad. It would be sad, man. The greatest thing about this schedule, quite frankly, is we get – if we beat Utah to start, I think after that people will be – even if you are 2-2 after 4 weeks, people are going to be stoked. Even if you're 1-3 after 4 weeks and the one win was against Utah, there's going to be a certain element of – well, gosh, that has not been the start we hoped. But we did beat Utah. I feel like Utah's the most important game of those four. And I don't usually say that about Utah, right?
Right.
But I think that's the most important game in that set of four. It's not the game that would be the biggest win, because I actually think beating Washington would be the biggest win, right, historically. But, gosh, ending that losing streak against Utah would be a big deal, I think, for Kalani and for the players and for the fans.
And doing it to open up the season, you know,
if Zach Wilson comes in and throws for like 400 yards and lights up the Utes, I'm pretty sure that there'll be stupid Utah fans calling for Whittingham to hang it up.
Yep.
Guarantee there'll be stupid Utah fans, just like they'll be stupid BYU fans if BYU loses that one game, that'll be asking for Kalani's head on a platter because they let Wilson go when none of those same fans gave a crap about Wilson coming, right? Because they had what's his bucket, who was like, you know, a 5-star recruit, right? And they were all okay with letting Wilson go, right? Some 3-star kid, right? But they'll be asking for his head.
Yep.
And I hope they fire him at that point. I hope Utah somehow loses their mind and fires Whittingham right then and there.
But what benefit does that really provide you? Just me? The satisfaction of Whittingham losing his
no,
job?
No, no, no. I love Whittingham. Whittingham's great. It's just that Utah's going to have a really hard time finding a better coach.
Oh, yeah. The replacement plan, yeah, you got rid of Whittingham. Plan. Is ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. You don't have an option as good as Whittingham.
Oh, don't ask Utah fans that. They think it's a top destination.
Yeah, I mean, Whittingham will find a job.
Oh, Whittingham would find a job
if they
like
came
the next
him, he'd find a job.
He'd be a defensive coordinator at a higher-tier P5 conference, like probably later that season. It'd be great. Anyway, well, Matt, that's all we got this week. We had lied to you last week and said we were going to do the Dante's Circles of Hell thing. We have decided to push that off till the end of the season. I started doing some research and putting some things together this weekend, and I feel like this is going to be like a 30-minute segment. And with basketball,
there's some real preparation that needs to go into this.
And with basketball and spring football, we don't have time for a 30-minute segment. So during the offseason, we're going to do some cool themed shows. That'll be one of them. We're also going to do themed shows on some of the best BYU football teams of all time and different things. So something to look forward in the offseason. Matt, any parting words before we're done?
That's it. That's all I got. I'm spent.
All right. Well, thank you all for downloading and listening. As we mentioned before, check out patreon.com/riseandshout. You can, as always, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, subscribe on iTunes, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!